The Adventures in Hellworld podcast talks in depth about QAnon. While it's meant to be comedic informative, sometimes we have to get into things like child abuse and violence against people. Listener discretion advised.
Hello, everybody. I am Mike Rains, a.k.a. Poker and Politics. I don't know why I'm so cheerful in this intro, but I'm going with it. And welcome to another episode of Adventures in Hellworld. This week, I am joined by Eric, the Deep State operative.
Hi, I just realized that while the intro was playing, I had my mic unmuted, so if anybody heard me typing, I apologize.
Oh, I thought that was just a remix where the clackling keys were just like the extra bumps that DJ Minimal Effort put in there.
Well, I thought for sure that I was muted, so I must have missed when I clicked.
Yep, and we're also joined by Steph. It's Steph, she's here!
I'm here, out of the hospital, yay!
Yeah.
And I just wanted to give a quick shout out to Ross, at A Restless Native. He was checking on me every day and he called me all the way from Scotland when I was in the hospital. And that really touched me. So thank you, Ross. And he's a longtime listener. And I also wanted to mention that, this podcast is available with transcripts and audio through fight.fudgy.org. You can find all of our transcripts and you can listen to the audio through that database.
Cool. Thank you for that update.
Yeah, and I didn't know about that, so I apologize to anyone who has to transcribe my my clogged up nose and my inability to make nasal fricatives right now.
I think it's really interesting for me that, like, the moment I start recording the show, my nose stuffs right up and I can catch myself mouth breathing on the microphone, like during the pod, and I'm just, God damn it. I need to get one of those like spray bottles that you just shoot at your nose and open up the nostrils right before the pod.
One of those windscreen things they put in front of the microphone.
Yeah.
Get a whiffer. The it looks like a little tampon, but it's like Vicks inhaler and it just goes up your nose. They're great.
I was thinking whiffer sounded like a position at the in the porn industry. You know, you got the fluffer, you got the whiffer. Yeah. Hellworld After Dark.
Oh, ASMR. Yeah. So, Steph's had a bad week. So, anything good happened to you, Eric, recently? And I say this immediately as Eric's family kidnaps him and drags him away. So, could not have timed that bit up more cleanly. Absolutely.
Well, you know what? I had an awful week, but I also look for the good in stuff. And I had a lot of people that were checking up on me and were, you know, looking out for me. And my husband was there every day and he's gone out of his way for me. So, you know, it was a bad week, but it was also a good week and it made me appreciate a lot of things that I have. And I got to name my kidney stone Roger. So that makes me happy. And I'm going to put him in a necklace. So, yeah, it was a bad week, but it was also a good week. And I got to watch the Barbie movie and I'm in love with it. So
catching up with the cultural zeitgeist, that is the way to be.
Yeah, my wife showed me this video on Saturday Night Live where they were doing the Ken song, but it was about Pete Davidson. And she got about 3/4 of the way through and realized that I had never heard the original song. So, like, a lot of the humor was being lost on me. So she showed me the actual video, too, which so now I have now seen about 5% of the Barbie movie.
Aha.
It was on TNT when I was in like the waiting bed in the emergency room where they take you before they put you in a room. It was on TNT and I was like, this is so kismet and perfect. So I got to see a little bit of it in the hospital and I was like,
TNT still exists.
Yeah. But I was like, I have to see this whole movie and I didn't know Will Ferrell was in it. And I'm like, okay. This kind of changes everything.
So, would you say you were in the pre-op room when it happened?
Yes, the pre-op room before they put me in a room. Yeah.
So next week I'm gonna have to give everyone my review of Oppenheimer. I'm gonna have to go find that movie that I never watched and be like, okay, we're fully back from the Barbenheimer moment of our American culture. It's going to be scintillating content. Man, my week was really just there. I mean, it's really one of those things where just floating around, dealing with people being very upset about the government shutdown ending, and then just kind of being, and then today happened, or should I say yesterday and today have happened, and it's just, man, just the twists and turns. It goes to show you why it's so easy to build the conspiracy theory around politics, because you just have this endless churn of content where there's just stuff going on 24/7. And it's just so easy to jump online and start spinning your yarns and explaining the narrative as you see it and mixing it in with the Illuminati and all that horse shit. And it's just always there. Like, if you are a football guy, football ends at some point. If you're into any sports ball, your sports ball will no longer exist after a few months. But politics is just perpetual if you want it to be. If you're willing to get into those weeds, you're there. And there are hucksters and con men who will tell you all about how the lizard people are trying to take over our world. But if you buy my dick pills and prepper buckets, I'll teach you how to defeat the lizard men and restore and save freedom for the world. Yeah. Yes, Steph, go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to, like, I kind of noticed, you know, I used my time in the hospital just kind of like think about some things. And I kind of formulated this thought, like, think of a conspiracy theory, like being in the hospital. You assume that every doctor and nurse that's assigned to you, you know, they change shifts and stuff like that. You assume that they know what's going on, but they don't. And people have this idea that the world, that the government works where everybody knows what's going on, what one person is doing in one department. It doesn't work that way. So I kind of thought, like, you know, think of the government like a hospital. You think it works a certain way, but it doesn't. It doesn't work the way you think it does. And, you know, you will have to repeat your story several times to several different nurses and several different doctors, because that's just the nature of the way things work. And I think that, like, people should kind of think about it a little bit more that way. Like, if you're in a conspiracy theory, so next time you're in a hospital, pay attention to that and realize that that's how the government works too. And, you know, it things aren't as connected and smooth as we think they are. So I kind of like use that opportunity to kind of think about that a little bit. And, you know, things aren't as connected as people think.
But that doesn't make things fun, because the fun world is where the bad guys are this monolithic evil who have everything coordinated and manage everything down to the micrometer and are all-knowing and are supremely powerful and yet are defeated by Donald Trump in elections repeatedly, because he is guided by the chosen. He is guided by the hand of God to deliver us from this evil. And if you'd like to know more, please give me $12.99 a month and I will explain to you the great shadow war between the Sovereign Alliance and the global hegemony and all these other dumb buzzwords that I see these clowns use and all this kind of stuff. So, yeah.
This is apropos of nothing, but it occurred to me while we were talking. We are now on 10 days since Dick Cheney died, and I have seen literally nothing about him on the internet. It's like he died and just his collective memory was wiped out, which in my opinion is the perfect way for his story to end, in oblivion and anonymity.
I the greatest thing I saw about Dick Cheney was he died on Election Day, I believe. Someone said, one of the greatest believers in Muslim democracy just perished. Don't let us down, New York City. And I was just like, that is such a bizarre but accurate way of describing Dick Cheney, in the sense he's like, yeah, we'll invade Iraq and it'll totally become a democracy. We can build that up right quick.
And, yeah, we'll make an America part two, lickety split.
Yep. And I mean, I'm sure there's a lot going on there, but Iraq is actually a democracy. Like those mad lads did it. They only had to kill 250,000 people and commit all kinds of war crimes. But I mean, if you lived in Iraq, I don't know, after we left the occupation, you're in pretty good shape. It's like, it'd be like being born in Japan in 1949. It'd be like, hey, it's pretty cool. I wonder what happened in the years right before my birth. Be like, yeah, they were really bad. You have no idea how bad they were. You are the luckiest of children in Japan right now. But, yeah, Dick Cheney, forget you, buddy. Nobody cares. Your current existence in the American political sphere is the fact that your daughter did a couple campaign rallies with Kamala Harris, which meant that Kamala sold us out to the neocons, and that's why she lost. And, oh, God, do I have to hear about all that crap? I actually had a really hilarious engagement with someone, just going around the barn about if we just ran on FDR's platform, we would totally win and all this kind of stuff. And this person yelled at me because I said that rich people do help the Democrats out, but more rich people help out the Republicans. They built Fox News and this massive propaganda apparatus that controls so much of our media that is all right wing bullshit. And this person was very mad at me, and they were so mad at me that they made a tweet. They replied to their own tweet, so they had two tweets to attack me with. And when I went to respond to them, they had already blocked me. So thanks, person, for your sparkling political debate that I got to have with you, where you were just like, fuck you, man. Rich people back Democrats too. That makes them bad too. And then boom, blocked me. And I was like, well, I guess I will not be able to retaliate to your piercing political commentary that has shown me, for the neoliberal centrist shill that I am. You got me. On Mom's and Dad's bed. Go ahead, Eric. Oh, he got grabbed by family.
Yeah, no, my Alexa went off, so I was trying to mute it so you guys didn't have to hear the notification.
Oh, cool. Oh.
Yeah.
Alexa is family.
Yeah. Well, what I was going to say was that I just love that on Twitter when somebody throws a hissy fit and then rage quits before you can even respond to it.
It's very funny because our first story that I was going to get into before we then spend the next, 45 minutes talking about the Epstein shit, is there was a lady on TikTok who has been calling local churches in North Carolina. And
actually, I think she was calling all over the country from what I read.
She may have been calling all over the country, but I remember she called an Islamic center in North Carolina, which is where that was the big call that I saw. But anyways, I could look up her name, but it doesn't really matter, because if you just type in phone call Islamic center, I'm sure you'd get it on TikTok. That'll bring it right to her channel. But basically, she's running a social experiment where she calls churches and other places of worship, plays a backing audio of a baby crying, and then tells the people on the phone, I just ran out of formula last night. Can I get a can of formula from you? And a lot of the churches found ways to kind of say no to her. Some said no, some would direct her to a food bank, and she'd be like, look, I went there, it wasn't working out for me. Can you help me directly? And the Islamic Center, of course, because this is the way the universe works. The Islamic Center was, yes, we will help you. What type of formula do you want for your baby? And so many people have gotten all kinds of angry about this and have said that it's a cheap tactic. It's a way to attack Christians. It's she was being deceitful, so they were right to say no. And the thing is that if you have an ethos, if you have a code, and Christianity comes with it, a code, you have to abide by the code. That's the whole point of having one. And one of Christ's big teachings is that you take care of the poor and the less fortunate. It's not just biblical. It's the words of Christ. It's the red letters in the Bible that he, like the divine son of God, said. And when you get into this whole, hey, that's really not what it means. It's like, no, this is, I can read the words on the page. I can see what it says, and it says what it says. And that says, like, yo, take care of people, take care of the poor. Don't be a dick. Jesus didn't say that directly, but he did say the other stuff.
And wasn't there something about whatsoever you do to the least of us, you do to me or something? It's like, Jesus was basically a socialist, but nobody, you know.
Oh, I threw that quote at some guy when I was talking about the SNAP benefits, and oh man, that must be like his personal, you know, button, because when I said that, he just let me have it. He was like, he was informing me that I do not understand the deep seated nuance of that and how it's actually about private charity and has nothing to do with government, even though the person saying that line is a king.
Yeah. 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 When the Son of Man comes in his glory and all the angels with him, he will sit on his glorious throne and all the nations will be gathered before him. He will separate the people one from the other as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will put the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, come, you are blessed by my Father. Take your inheritance, the kingdom prepared for you since the creation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. And then the righteous will answer him, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you something to drink? When did we see you as a stranger and invite you in, or needing clothes and clothe you? When did we see you sick or in prison to go visit you? The king will reply, truly I say to you, whatever you did for the least of these brothers and sisters of mine, you did for me. And then he literally says the opposite to the other bad people and says, you didn't do any of that shit. Be gone from me. I cast ye aside. And go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. No, go ahead.
Yeah. So that is, that's Matthew 25, and it's the parable of, it's the sheep and the goats. So 31 through 45 is what I quoted there. And I actually had one guy, I've been in a running argument with him all day, and the whole time he's arguing with me, he just constantly says that I'm lying. Like, the first line of every sentence he types out at me is, you are lying, or you're lying, and that I know I'm lying. And I love it when people tell me what I think and what I believe and what I'm reading your mind, and I know your motivations. I know your thoughts, which is insane to me. It's a psychotic way to argue a debate, where you just literally call your opponent a liar the whole time you're talking to them. But to me, the point of this social experiment that this woman was doing is that even if you knew the person on the phone was calling you in bad faith to do something deceptive, your creed, your pact with God, your belief in Jesus makes it so that even if a person in bad faith asks you for a can of formula, you say, yeah, I'll get right on that for you. No problem. Because that's what you're supposed to do. I mean, there have been so many times at my job where someone will say something to me like, oh yeah, this stuff's rigged, isn't it? No, or just they'll say, hey, how do you beat this game? What's going on? And I have to answer them straight. I have to answer them in this totally serious, well, sir, ma'am, we don't rig the blackjack in any way, shape, or form. All the cards come out of the machine randomly and blah, blah, blah. And that's what I have to do because that's my job. And I have to say these things. I can't be like, oh yeah, we're totally scamming you. We're trying to take your money. We're robbing you. I mean, I can explain the house edge and that kind of stuff, but I have to take this person's question seriously, even though they're not asking it to me seriously. They're saying it in a sardonic or mocking way, or they expect me to like go along with their joke, which I don't even know if it's a joke or not, but I don't have the free will to roll with the punch or play improv with them and start riffing, because I'm in a situation where I, as an employee of a casino, have to conduct myself in a certain way. And so you might be like, oh, that's your job. Well, according to Christianity, your job is basically meaningless, and being true to your faith is the difference between going to heaven or burning in hell. So I would think that being a Christian means you do have to be on some level willfully naive. And if this person calls you up and is just, hey, can you score me some baby formula? My kid. Yeah, like I got a kid. My kid has ran out of formula and they're crying. See, that was my kid. They were crying. Can you give me a bottle of formula? You have to say yes. Get right on that for you. Because that's your ethos. That's what you're supposed to do when you are a church that is supposed to take care of the least of us. Is that even if someone's prank calling you on this crap, even if it all worked out the way you say it was, and this person drove up to your church and took a bottle of formula from you and then drove away cackling, great, they're up $15. You maintained your soul and your path towards heaven and glorious immortality in exchange for $15 with some jerk. And when the two of you go to the pearly gates for judgment, that little interaction is going to be a check mark in your favor and an X against them. And that's just the way it is. And again, if you're all mad about it, hey, guess what? Judge not, lest you be judged. It's God's job to do the judging. Let the big guy take care of it. And of course, these people are very mad at me because I openly will state, yeah, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in your religion. They're like, that means you just hate. And I'm like, I don't hate your God, as I said to this guy. I'm like, I could no more hate your God than I could hate Voldemort or any other fictional character, because your God in my mind is not real. I don't have any evidence to support the idea that your Christian God is real. And reading the Bible makes it really clear to me that it would be horrifying if your God was real, because there's a lot of bad stuff in that book. I mean, this is what happened after Mandani won the election, and people were like, Islam is incompatible with the West and civilization. And it's like, well, read your book and see how compatible it is. Spoiler, not at all compatible. Actually, really terrifying. It's not great. But yeah, I find these kinds of social experiments interesting. And the people that get defensive about them are defensive because they know that some people are going to fail the test. And instead of being mad at the people that fail the test, they're mad at the test giver, which is ridiculous, because all the test giver did was say, hey, here's a test, pass it or fail it. And then the other person, the person who was taking the test, failed the test. And that's on them. It's not on anybody else. You can't be like, oh, she was lying. There was no child. There was deception. See, how could you know that through a phone call? And even if you knew the phone call was in some way deceptive, that's still no justification for you by your faith to say no to the request for aid. I remember I was on a train and this guy, young guy in shabby clothes, walked up to me and said that, he had gotten approved for a detox center, but he needed $140 for the bed that he was going to be sleeping in at that detox center, like the hotel or whatever. And I gave him $20, and then he went to like somebody else and gave the same speech, and they gave him some money, and he kept walking away from them. And then the wife of the guy that gave him money said, he's not going to a detox center. He's a junkie. He's just getting that money to get more drugs. And in my head, it's like, well, if he does that, he does that. But if there's a chance that he's actually going to a detox center and trying to get clean, why would I not want to help him? And if he's not doing that, then what's $20 to me? It's not the end of my life. The wolf ain't going to be at my door over that. So why begrudge this guy the money? What's the deal? What's the issue? So that's my morality. Very exciting. And my two co-hosts have fallen asleep, everybody, so I'm gonna have to run the rest of the show myself.
No, I was just going to say that I've been listening to this really good series on the Conspirituality podcast about liberation theology. And they've been talking about like some pastors from all around the world and some in the United States, like some of them who stick true to their faith, who really do. And I listening to the series, it gives me a sense of hope that, you know, I mean, and when there are some good people out there who do follow the faith. The day that my dad's house burned down, his pastor showed up and it was in Pennsylvania and I had weed and he said to me, I'll hold your weed for you. He said, the cops aren't going to arrest a pastor. I'm like, that's a man of God. That's a real man of God. Like he showed up for us. That's a real man of God. And there are some real people out there who really do care. There are some priests out there who are protesting ICE. And the only problem is the assholes are always louder. It's always the assholes that are loud. And you don't hear the sweet people. The sweet people aren't as loud. But I just want people to keep in mind that, you know, the racist QAnon pastors and these assholes that, you know, are like, oh, good, lock up all the immigrants. Those aren't the real people, and they're not the majority. And I just think we all need to keep that in mind.
I would like to imagine they're not the majority. It is a fight. It is a struggle that we are dealing with in the world.
This actually got me thinking, my son recently joined Cub Scouts and I'm getting ready to sign up as a scoutmaster for it. And it's through a local church. So they want me to go through, the church's, background checks and all that stuff. And so there's this like big, huge trendy thing I got to watch about, you know, about, sexual abuse of children. And as you can imagine, the Catholic Church is very, very serious about being like, look, we are not okay with children being abused. And so it's just this big, huge thing. And they keep going on. And there was, you just made me think of it right now. Cause they're like, here's some facts about child abuse. And it's like, you know, most of the time it's somebody that the child or the community knows and trusts and blah, blah, blah. And then one of them is, most child abusers are not members of the clergy. I'm like, wow, subtle.
Just, yeah, well, I mean, they just had to deal with so much bad press from that.
Right. Someone who grew up in the Catholic Church, I know there was a lot, you would listen to people talk, you would think that two out of every three priests are actively molesting somebody at the moment. It's
right. Oh, yeah.